Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I've been interviewing a lot of athletes lately. Let's get a cool celebrity on that's doing a lot of fun things. So I'm excited to welcome the program Glee cast member, JJ Tota. JJ, thanks for calling. And you were the youngest Glee cast member. How are you, JJ?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic, fantastic. And I'm sure you're excited about any time you get to talk to your fans for sure on the radio, aren't you? Anytime you get the chance to talk about...
Of course, yeah. I always like answering questions and whatever they want.
Exactly. So, JJ, kind of tell us the background, how you got into acting. Tell me a little bit of that story, when you first started acting and stuff.
Well, I watched my sister do a play. She was really into musical theater, like professional theater, as like when she was like 10. And I said that I wanted to start doing acting, so then I did local theater. And then when my sister got into UCLA, my mom said I could take an acting class. And I did, and that lady referred me to another casting director who casted the Shia LaBeouf and Hilary Duff series. And then she had a stand-up comedy for kids at the Hollywood Improv. So then I performed at the Hollywood Improv, and that's how I found my agent and manager.
They saw your talent very quickly, right? Through the your agent saw, hey, this is somebody that's going to do something, right? Sounds like, for sure. And then you knew you were going to start working, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it took, obviously, a couple of months. I was in Hollywood Improv, and when they recognized me and they saw me, they were in the audience. They said that they wanted to work with me. And then I was having a lot of auditions, so then I realized that I needed to move from, like, San Francisco to L.A. because I needed to go there full time because I kept on going back and forth.
So are you going to school in LA, or are you getting homeschooled right now? How's that work?
I'm going to a school in LA that lets you go to the school and you can go, and then also homeschool.
So it's a back and forth type of thing, for sure. And does your family see education as an important thing as a backup if you don't make it big time?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the school that I go to is rated 17 in like the whole America's, I don't even know, I think so. I think my mom's was. So it's a very prestigious school, even though it is kind of homeschool / going there. My brother and sister both attend UCLA. My brother's a freshman and my sister's a senior. And they're both studying high, you know, academic stuff. I don't even know. My brother's doing studying political science. I can't talk. And my sister's doing like psychology and biology. So... Huh. School is real in our family.
So that's good. It's real because you never know what can happen. Fame could disappear quickly, and opportunities could disappear quickly. You know, so you always got to have that background. And to tell our listeners out there how important education is to you, that's very, 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 very good. Now, what would you say was your biggest break, JJ? Tell us when you could say, "Hey, this is the biggest big break," and now it started. It started to go from there. What would you say?
I think it would be when I did. I started recording on a Disney show called Jessie. That was like 4 years ago, and I think that's when people started recognizing me. That really opened me up to other projects and stuff. But I'm still working on. I'm still in the midst. I haven't. You know what I mean? I'm always still working and trying to get better and better. So and that was my first kind of. That was a start.
So being on Jessie, was that pretty cool? For sure.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, and it still continued to recur on Jessie, and so yeah, that was really fun.
Oh, so you're still on Jessie sometimes too, for sure. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, I've been throughout. I started season two, and I've been throughout all three of the seasons. So I've got up to season four, and I'm doing a couple episodes that are going to be coming out soon.
All right, well, fantastic. And then the opportunity with Glee must have been wild for sure to be the youngest cast member to be on Glee. That was pretty cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was amazing. I watched Glee. When it started, I was like 8 years old, and I wasn't even acting at all. I didn't even consider it. It was only until I was like 9 and 10 when I really found the aspiration to want to act. So I was watching Glee in my living room in San Francisco, like, 6 years ago, not dreaming and like seeing them sing and dance and stuff. And then now I'm like on Glee. So that is like so like, ah! Like in my head, explosion. That was a weird like voice, but yeah, that's how I felt.
And the Beyond Glee, and then you have Jesse. So you have fans in a bunch of different areas, wouldn't you say? You got Jesse, you got Glee. So a variety of fans, right? For sure.
Yeah, and sometimes even older. I mean, I did like Two Broke Girls, which is, you know, a very, you know, more adult kind of, you know, comedy. And then like New Girl and The X's and stuff. So I get to showcase myself and my abilities to a wide range of ages.
All right. Well, fantastic. And February 27th is big for you too, right? That's a big date coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, February 27th is the day that my episode of Glee airs. And so I am really excited. It is amazing. I don't know if you guys saw like the Entertainment Tonight press release, but I'm singing Lose My Breath by Beyonce. And that's out on iTunes. You guys should definitely check that out. And I also did a duet with Lea Michele, and we did Break Free. And then I'm also in Cool Kids, which is by Echo Smith, which I love that song. So if you guys want any of these songs, literally go buy them on iTunes. I Know I Am, and I'm like playing them on replay. They're awesome.
So that must be amazing. You're talking about all the press you're getting for this February 27th thing. That must be so real for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very real, especially because when I filmed it, that was a while ago. It was like 2 months ago. So I had to wait a long, long time. I had to wait from like December 18th. And now I can officially announce that I am on it. So that was really, really cool.
Oh, absolutely. And the excitement. Now, how do your friends think about your success, especially, you know, your siblings that are in college, you said, but also your friends? What do they think of your success and how you stay grounded? Because you definitely seem like a grounded kid. You're not like, you know, hey, I'm too cool to talk to anyone. It seems like you're very down to earth and things like that. How do you keep, you know, your work away from things, especially when you're well known in certain aspects, especially when you talk about Jesse and Glee?
I just think that, like, not being humble and, like, out there, that's my biggest fear. I never want to be that, and I never want to get caught up in that. So I always have that in mind. Like, if I ever feel that I'm being the slightest bit not humble and not giving back that moment or, like, a month when I don't do something, you know, any kind of kind, I'll, like, freak out and I'll be like, I can't turn into somebody that I do not want to be. So I keep myself in check, definitely. And obviously my parents are very, very, you know, keeping me there. And my friends, they appreciate and they're happy that, you know, when I book stuff too. But I have a lot of friends in the industry. So we like to celebrate each other's, you know, successes. So it's really cool to have friends that are also doing the same thing that you're doing.
It's got to be great, and you're busy, and you're a working actor, and you're happy about that. And what are your thought process when it's time for you to go to college? Are you going to do what you said? Your siblings, are they actors as well, or did they take some time off? Is this an acting family?
My sister, she's a senior at UCLA. My manager like met with her and she was like, oh my God, she's amazing. Although my sister doesn't really want to focus on acting, she does have a manager and she's like considered on the roster, which I think is hilarious. We have the same manager. And my agent was like, oh, we'll take you too. So my agent and manager both have, you know, my sister, but she does not really focus on that, you know, at all. She does go out and like some like big stuff, but you know what I mean? She focuses on school, and when it comes to the time, I'm definitely going to go to college, and you never know. I can never predict the future, but if I am on a series one there, I will take it online for 2 years, and then I'll go to college. I'll transfer in for the rest of the 2 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. So where's the best place we can find you? And again, promote again, February 27th, all over the place. People can tune in by checking you out. Where's the best place? And I know you're going to be tweeting and Instagramming, doing all the different things leading up to February 27th for sure in the promotion, right?
Yeah. So you guys should definitely watch that episode and stay tuned to the end of that episode, because there is going to be something. It's a huge surprise. It's going to be really cool. And it's February 27th, Fox at 9 o'clock. That is Western. So if you are in New York, I don't know if people listening are from New York or if they're just
all
you know,
over the world are listening right now. So, yes.
Oh, my God. That's so if you're from New York, it's going to be 2 hours or whatever the time before that. Oh my God, I probably shouldn't have said that because I do not know what the time difference is in New York. A couple hours, right?
Yeah.
So if you're in New York, you're going to have to do the math, but you'll enjoy it too.
That's awesome. And best of luck and any other projects coming up. I'm sure, again, you can tune in for you for Jesse as well, right? Is that correct?
Of course. I have another really exciting project that I'm not able to talk about right now, but I can say it is with Fox. So you guys will have to stay tuned and follow me on Instagram at @BJJChoda and Twitter at @JJChoda if you guys want to live tweet with me February 27th when the first episode airs and find out what all the big surprises are. They'll be on my social media.
Well, I'm going to be tuning in February 27th, and I'll be live tweeting you and follow you on Twitter as well. And best of luck, and you're welcome to come on the show anytime when you have big news. So, JJ, thanks for calling, and we'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
You too, JJ. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey.
You're listening to The Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back, The Total Celebrity Show, on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I just tell you, it's so funny how you connect with people on Facebook, especially celebrities. And I remember him playing in the NFL, but then he has been back on the main stage again with The Biggest Loser. So I'm excited to welcome the program former NFL player and Biggest Loser contestant, Scott Mitchell. Scott, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm doing fantastic.
Well, I'm sure you're doing fantastic with anybody who gets to train with The Biggest Loser. And I've done the cookbook and stuff like that back in the day to lose a lot of weight at times. Not to the amount that you lost, but truly you see that when you feel healthier, you're happier. Right, Scott?
Yeah, it's so interesting to see what I look like now and kind of the before and after pictures. And when I see them, I don't see the physical transformation that I went through. I really see an emotional one. And I'm just such a different person from where I was before. I feel alive again. I feel like me. I feel like a completely different person.
Definitely. Now, Scott, going back, let's go back, because, again, I remember your NFL career for sure and stuff like that, and your name definitely rang a bell right off the bat in specific things. Did you always want to be an NFL player growing up?
Yeah, it's funny. I was in the sixth grade, and I've been at my and we had career orientation week, and in fact, I'm going through that with my daughter right now. And you would go through these tests, and then you'd decide what you wanted to be at the end of the week. And I sat down with the counselor and my mom, and the counselor said, "All right, what career do you want to pick? Because our aptitudes tests say you're most likely to be a garbage man or a mortician." And I was just mortified. You know, you got to be kidding. You know, it was just terrible. And he says, "Now, you don't have to pick one of these, but pick something that you really think you can do." And so I said, "You know, I want to be a professional football player." And he said, "Look, nobody from Springville, Utah has ever been a professional football player. Let's pick something that you can really do." And yeah, I sat for a minute. I thought, you know, maybe I'll say doctor, lawyer, something that sounds good. And I said, "No, I'm going to be a professional football player." And so they wrote that down as my career choice in the sixth grade.
Oh, wow. So you didn't like those other choices, right? You said, "This is going to be more glamorous." So you wrote that down. Then you said, "Well, I have to go and go after that. If you put it on paper, let's..."
Yeah, I always believed I could do it. And it was really kind of a neat thing. I mean, I don't know how many people grow up and live their childhood dream, but I did. I had an amazing experience in the NFL. And I mean, it was just really incredible. It was so, so intense and so exhilarating to play in games and to win games and to get out on the field and compete against the best and be one of the very best. And then all the people that I met along my journey, I was able to play with some pretty amazing players and coaches. It was truly an amazing experience, a great part of my life.
So once you went to go play at the University of Utah, you didn't know for sure, you had a goal of the NFL, but it wasn't that, not a lot of people come out of Utah right into the NFL. As we see now, it's a little different, but at that time, Utah wasn't really hotbed for college football that say, okay.
No, in fact, I don't think Utah had a player drafted in quite some time before I got there. There were players that played, Steve Clark actually played for the Miami Dolphins, was a lineman there. But in recent memory, there weren't a lot of players. And what happened with me is it was just every level I got to, I just excelled at. I just could do it, and I could do it very well. And so in my mind, it was just this natural progression everywhere that I went. It never seemed to be bigger than what I could handle. I mean, don't get me wrong, when I first got to the NFL, I was so starstruck seeing Dan Marino and Don Shula, and there was certainly an adjustment. I mean, I didn't feel like, I'll ever catch up to the speed of this, but I got in my first preseason games, and I was like, well, this is just like football I played my whole life, I was just able to pick up to the speed and could handle it, and I just excelled at it. It just seemed like a very natural course of my life, and I could just always do it.
See, I don't even remember about that. I always remember you as a line. I was looking at Wikipedia, and it said behind Dan Marino, who's my favorite quarterback of all time, because, again, this is Pittsburgh and University of Pittsburgh, and I'm a huge Pitt fan, so hail to Pitt for our listeners out there. But playing behind
Dan
Marino.
Dan Marino's my favorite. He's my favorite quarterback of all time. I mean, it was such a wonderful experience to watch him practice every day, just how he approached the game. I mean, he was so impressive. He just always threw great passes. I mean, even in practice, and he loved to practice, and it wasn't just practice. He liked to really, he knew that was part of what made him successful. And so it was a wonderful experience. I mean, if you could imagine this, for 4 years, I sat in meetings between Don Shula and Dan Marino. And I got to watch and listen and absorb what made them special and great for 4 years. It was an incredible time in my life.
You could write a book.
If I can tell you a funny story about Dan, my mom called me up, and she lives in Phoenix, Arizona, and she said, this new family came to church today, and they had five boys, and I went up to them after church and introduced myself, and they said, well, here's our oldest son, and his name's Daniel Scott. And we named him after my husband's favorite quarterback, Dan Marino. And then we were at the University of Utah when Scott Mitchell was there, so we named him Daniel Scott. And my mom looked at the lady and said, well, Scott's my son.
Oh, wow.
So she thought, well, this is a small world. She called me on the phone, and I asked my mom, I said, Mom, how come I got the middle name and Dan got the first one? And my mom said to me, well, Dan was a better quarterback than you, so you have to take the middle name.
So playing behind him, you learned a lot of different things from Marino, and they saw your talent, and then you got your opportunity with the Lions. And you played when the Lions were winning. Again, that's the other thing that people say. When were the Lions?
Go figure.
So I guess you definitely don't go by the title Biggest Loser when you played in the NFL, because if you would have played for the Lions other years, it would have been a different story. But to get to play with one of the greatest running backs of all time, I'm sure you'd think he is the greatest running back of all time, Barry Sanders, who I got to interview a month ago, and he's a tremendous guy. I tell you, that team was an interesting team, you playing with the Lions, and you were winning, which was amazing for sure.
Yeah, we had a lot of talent, and it was interesting because it was really pretty simple what we did. We put our best players on the field, and we put them in position to excel and make great plays. And Barry was a great runner when you spread out the defense. So we always lined up in three wide receivers. Our three wide receivers were probably as good as anyone in the NFL. I had Herman Moore and Brett Perriman and Johnny Martin. And then our tight end was Dave Sloan, who was not bad himself. And then the offensive coordinator was Tom Moore, who went on and coached with Peyton Manning for quite a few years. And That was the genesis of Tom's offense. I mean, we basically invented that when he was in Detroit, and so it was actually quite fun to be a part of. And it's unfortunate that we just weren't given more time. I think had we been given more time as a team to stay together, we would have had similar type of numbers and success as what happened with the St. Louis Rams when that whole team was put together, and the same thing with Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. I mean, we had a lot of talent. And what happened is a coach got fired and a new philosophy came in, and personnel just didn't match, Bobby Ross's style. He was a very, big, pounded out, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, ball control kind of person. And the personnel we had was wide open, you know, fast break football, and it just didn't mesh. And Barry Sanders was not a tackle to tackle runner, and that's not how we fit as a team. So it just didn't work out, and it's unfortunate.
You were the St. Louis Rams before the St. Louis Rams, for sure.
We were the greatest show on turf before the greatest show on turf ever existed.
Exactly, as I remember.
It was fun. I mean, we had a lot of fun and a lot of good players. And Barry was incredible to watch. Just to hand the ball off to him was a treat, and to watch. You know, as a quarterback, you're supposed to carry out your fake, and there were times that I just had to stop in awe of what I was seeing. I mean, it was truly amazing, and he is a great guy, I had a lot of really good teammates. And like I said, I mean, I played with some special people, and that was certainly a treat.
You definitely were playing with some special people. And Scott, when I think about when you're talking about, again, winning with the Lions, seeing this opportunity, different things like this, and your dream of going to the NFL, at the time, kind of like stepping back a bit and looking back, did your parents make education an important part of your life as well throughout that time, especially when you went to Utah and all those different things? Did you see academics as important for you?
Yeah, you know, what was interesting is my grandmother on my mother's side, she was a school teacher, and she's one of 12 children.
Wow.
And she grew up in the Depression, and all 12 of her siblings were college educated. So education was always a big, you know, it was an emphasis in my home, but it wasn't just about school. It was about, you know, always seeking to find knowledge and learn things, and that's something that I've always found a passion for in my life. Just learning new things and figuring things out. And my dad was a voracious reader. You know, he probably had thousands of books in his home, and he just constantly was reading things. And I've kind of taken that same vein, I guess, in my life, where I just enjoy learning new things and reading books and learning about things. And so, yeah, it's been a very important part of my life.
So that helped you a lot in the NFL. Because
that's an interesting question, by the way. I don't normally get asked.
No, that's what you're on an education talk show that does celebrity interviews. I'm always going to put that little quote out there for sure.
It's like, hey, we're just a bunch of dumb athletes. Come on, you know, it's dumb football.
I don't think so. That's the one thing that people miss. The point is to be in the highest levels, plus playing in the NFL as a quarterback. That football IQ, you have to have intelligence. You for sure do. And you have to be able to do so many different things. The playbook, understand specific things. And you weren't the fleetest foot quarterback, for sure. So you had to utilize a lot of your ingenuity on the field to figure out plays, to do different things. You weren't like deciding you're going to, you know, run for 30 yards.
Well, you know, here's the crazy thing about that. I'm gonna educate you here a little bit.
Okay, Scott.
My combine 40 time was 4.71.
Oh wow!
I actually am a very good athlete. I was a 3-state all state player. I actually played 2 sports in college, baseball and football, and it was always my secret because I am so tall and I had this appearance like, you know, kind of gangly, awkward guy, but don't let that fool you. I scored 16 touchdowns in my career, and my longest run is actually 38 yards. So,
but what about when the NFL? You kind of slowed that down, right? Because they didn't really want quarterbacks running out of the. Did you run out of the pocket a lot?
Here's the thing. All right, this whole myth of the running quarterback and the mobile quarterback—it's all BS. Just so you know.
Okay.
How it happened was really through free agency and partially me, actually, because I had been drafted by the Miami Dolphins. I'd been tutored, groomed, and then in 4 years I left. So they spent all this effort and time to develop me, and they didn't see any of the benefits of that. And so what happened with free agency is they just started throwing all these quarterbacks in, you know, rookie season. Let's, you know, we got to, we got to find out if these guys can play, and we don't want to wait around for 4 years and then have them become free agents, and then they have all the leverage against us. It's like, no, you know, throw them in the fire and see what sticks. Well, when a guy first gets in the league, he has no clue what he's doing. So he's going to run around. He's going to go back to kind of his basic instinct. And so the guys that were kind of succeeding early on were the guys that could run around. And so, oh, you got to have a mobile quarterback to be, you know, that's the wave of the NFL. But then if you look at it over time, all those mobile guys, they take a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And these guys in the NFL, they're the trained assassin. They will tackle you, and it will hurt. And you just can't be effective as a quarterback and just take that pounding all the time. So if you look at the guys that for a long period of time succeed, they do so because they can make all the throws they need to make in order to win in this league. If you can throw the football, you can do very well in the NFL. And I mean, there's a lot of guys who've won Super Bowls that, you know, pretty much just throw the ball and are not and do not move around and weren't high draft choices and weren't necessarily athletic guys, but they understood how to play quarterback and they could throw the ball.
Interesting. So you're educating me and reminding myself, hey, if you played for the Steelers, I'd say you were running, you did run the as a quarterback. So your career winded down with the Lions, and you ended up leaving the Lions to play for a couple other teams. Tell us, I mean, it was specifically backup roles after that, after leaving the Lions? Did you?
It was a mix. I went to Baltimore. I was actually traded to Baltimore from Detroit, and I was kind of excited about that. Brian Billick, I'd known since I was in high school, and he recruited me when he was at Utah State. I didn't go there, but so I knew him. And then when I became a free agent in Miami, and I was either going to go to Minnesota or Detroit. Well, he was the offensive coordinator in Minnesota, so he really wanted me when he coached there. And then he obviously coached against me for 5 years in Detroit, and we kicked their butt most of the time. And so he knew what I could do, and so I go there as a starter, and I end up playing a game and a half, and it was kind of like, you know, it was just a weird situation. And so that lasted a year, and then the next year they signed Trent Dilfer, and you know, he's not even the starter at the beginning of the year, and they end up winning the Super Bowl a year after I'm there, and I'm just like, you know, I know I could have done at least what Trent Dilfer did for you. You know, it's kind of, you know, it just never made any sense to me, and it is what it is. But then the next year I went to Cincinnati, and I was there for 2 years, and it was kind of as a, you know, in a backup role to some degree, but I did end up playing several games my first year there towards the end of the season, and that was kind of pretty much the last time I really played in the NFL. And the thing for me is, you know, the football gods giveth and they taketh away, and there's a lot of reasons and things that are kind of out of your control and how things happen, and I'm just grateful for all of the time that I had, and I had an amazing experience, and I did it the right way. I prepared myself. I played as a professional all the way through and saw it through to the very end. And that's what I'm really proud about in my career. I never gave up, and in spite of kind of things maybe not being necessarily fair or going my way.
Well, we definitely remember Scott Mitchell for sure with the Detroit Lions, his best part of his career. And I'm sure Detroit remembers those years as well with you and Barry Sanders. So finally, you have to hang it up. It's a tough thing. And this is a perfect story because, we're talking to Scott Mitchell, former NFL star, Biggest Loser contestant. And you're going to say, okay, so life after football, did it treat you really good, Scott? And we know health-wise it didn't, but did you know exactly what you wanted to do once you retired?
It was a hard adjustment. And I think if you talk to any player, they'll tell you how hard it is to go and leave the thing that you love and you're very good at and you've spent really your entire life preparing for and doing it. That's a hard thing to give up and move on. And when I came to terms with it, because it would have been easier had I just had a knee, you know, like a knee injury or some kind of career ending injury that just said, hey, you can't play anymore. I just 1 year was good enough to play, and I got signed to a deal. And then the next year, nobody signed me, and no one signed me the year after that or the year after that. And you just kind of go, well, I guess it's over finally. It was a slow death, my retirement, which was very hard. But when I finally came to terms with it, I'm like, look, you can do anything you want in your life. You just can't play football. So it was like there were a million things I could do, and there was only one thing I couldn't do. And it's like I'm not limited to what I can do. I mean, I'm still young. I have resources, and I can do anything that I want to do. And that got really exciting for me. And I've been able to move on, and I've moved into the business world and other areas. And, you know, right now I'm looking to get into broadcasting. I'm in the process of actually writing a book, which I'm really excited about. But that the transition from football was hard, but I believe I made it. And you know, there were some challenges as far as, you know, I really let myself go as far as my weight. And there were a lot of things I found out about that, you know, some of it was related to my football career, but some of it wasn't. And it was definitely an emotional amount of baggage that helped, that was part of me gaining a lot of weight when I retired.
Wow. So basically the as an entrepreneur and business person, you didn't have the training schedule that you had in the NFL. You basically were always on the go, didn't have that time to work out, ate the finest foods, traveled lots of times, didn't eat the right foods. And how much did you let yourself go? Because again, Scott, I heard about it when you were going to be a contestant, but that's as far as I knew. And then bam, you ended up on Facebook and said, I got to friend you. But go ahead, yeah, tell me. Yeah.
So I went on the show and I weighed 366 pounds.
Wow.
So I mean, it was crazy. And it was part of that, you know, where you live this active lifestyle, and then I'm in an office, and I'm, you know, challenged by building up a business, but that business has nothing to do with any physical activity. So you're always in meetings, you're always in an office, you're building things that way, and you just, you know, you just don't find the time, and I didn't, to exercise and eat right. And as an athlete, it's like, you know, I can kind of eat about what I want. I'm working out all the time, so it never was an issue. And I hadn't really developed good habits as far as my nutrition, or really had a good knowledge of proper nutrition. And I hated exercise when I retired. I was like, this is what I did for a job, and I don't want to do it anymore. So I part of going on the show was learning about proper nutrition and exercise, but it was also understanding the emotional issues that caused me to eat. And I was kind of shocked at what I found. And, you know, I had this life-saving experience on The Biggest Loser. I mean, it was kind of humiliating to me when I went on the show and they said, you are the most unhealthy contestant we've ever had. And it was just such a blow to me because here I'm this former professional athlete, and I know they have a lot of people that have been on the show that have never even been an athlete or even been healthy or even been skinny in their lives. And I was kind of the worst one. And that was a real shock to me that, wow, things have really fallen apart for me. And I need to really take a hard look at where I am in my life, and I need to make some changes. And there are things going on here that I need help with. I need to find that help, and thank goodness I was able to on the show.
So, Scott, did you think you had a shot at winning? Did you have that thought process, I'm going to win because I'm a pro athlete and these guys, well, some of these people never trained before?
Absolutely. I felt that way. But I knew percentage-wise it was going to be hard for me. I mean, there were a lot of people a lot heavier than I was, and so that was going to be a challenge. I mean, I just couldn't compete with that. There's the strategy if you're trying to win the show is you got to get rid of all the people that are fatter than you are, and that's kind of a challenge. It's hard to do. I mean, when I got there, I just really had this empathy for everyone. I just know the struggle of food. If you have an issue, which I do, I have an issue with food, and you can't just say, well, I'll just avoid it. I can't avoid eating or I die. So it's been so interesting to me that here's this, I need food, I need nutrition to live, but I also, if I don't take care of it, the same thing I need to live with is going to kill me. And I find that so perplexing, and it's such a challenge. You have this addiction to food and you still have to eat. And so it's a tough thing to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And I just empathize with people. I mean, yeah, I wanted to win, but for me, it was more about
getting healthy,
changing, you know, saving my life. Absolutely. And I was able to do that. You know, my mom, she actually commented when I got done. She said, you know, she said, Dan Marino only lost 22 pounds on Nutrisystem and you lost 120 pounds. She said, you're better than Dan Marino now. So Dan's my backup in the weight loss department now. I'm the starter and the Hall of Famer in this whole relationship. And so it really was. It was an amazing experience where I really found who I was. I found what was important in my life. I found the tools to be healthy. I left the show when I was voted off in the 16th season or the 16th week at my ideal weight. So I had no weight to lose when I went home. So for 3 months before the finale, I just focused on maintaining a healthy weight. And that's been my focus since leaving the show. And it's just been, it's an amazing journey. So grateful to have experienced it.
Well, when you talk about, again, NBC's Biggest Loser and talking the contestants specific things, were you prepared for reality TV? I've interviewed a lot of reality television stars. I've had athletes, but trust me, some very interesting ones, and heard the story of one of the years in The Biggest Loser. Again, you don't know what to expect once it gets on film. What you do...
I can understand the challenge of all of it, and I may be a little unique in that regard because I didn't want to go on the show. I know a lot of people are that they'll try out multiple times for these shows and want to go on it and prepare for it and watch every episode. I'd never watched an episode. I really didn't want to go on it. I kind of stumbled onto the whole thing to begin with. They didn't pursue me or seek me out. And I was definitely not excited about exposing myself to America and where I was. I mean, that was not a comforting thought in any stretch of the imagination. And so I went on. I just felt like I was kind of directed to this. I felt it was kind of a blessing, a gift in my life. And so I just always had to remind myself I was on television and I was a reality TV personality. And because I was having this life-changing experience, and it's like, oh yeah, but there's a camera right here, and it was yeah. It was just kind of a surreal thing, but it's challenging. You're sequestered from everyone. I couldn't talk to my family. I had no cell phone. I had no access to the outside world. So that isolation can start, you know, draw, you know, kind of gnawing at you after some time, and you're in a tough situation because it's a competitive weight loss competition.
Right.
If you don't continue to lose weight, you don't stay there. And that could start playing on your brain a little bit, you know, cause I'm like, well, you know, where do I go with this? How, you know, cause I am very competitive and I absolutely wanted to win, but I also was like, wait a minute, this is my life. And, you know, and so there's this balance between, you know, this competition and your life. And what was really helpful on the show were really the people involved in it. I mean, everyone there is an independent contractor. So camera people, the sound, the production people, the production assistants, I mean, everyone, they go from show to show and they all just, the show they love the most is The Biggest Loser. Cause they say of all reality TV, it is real. And you really do make a change in your life, and it does impact people's lives, and it has impacted my life in such a huge way. And I mean, it saved my life. And the people really are passionate about it on the show, and they care about it, and they care about the people. And yeah, there's weird things that happen, and I understand some of the controversy that's happened through the years. But by and by, the main objective is to really help people fight obesity.
Well, Scott, I mean, this is, again, a life train transformation, which you didn't think going on this reality television show this would do this. But I tell you, everyone that I've talked that's been a contestant or even a participant, meaning or like a trainer, sees what happens. When you get to see these stories of your other competitors, their lives change right in front of you. It makes you reflect. It makes you think. And I think it's changed your life tremendously. So what would you say how your life changed once you got back home from the ranch? What things, first of all, eating healthy, living, but how did you change yourself moving forward to today, especially when you talk about writing a book and all that?
Sure. Most of most of my journey has been an emotional one. And I didn't recognize it. I thought, you know, when I went on the show initially, it was like, okay, I got to get my physical health back. And if I don't, I'm going to die, because that's what happened to my dad. He passed away about a year ago from complications of just being obese, and he had diabetes, and he had all these other issues. And so I watched my dad die, and I knew that that's what was going to happen to me, that I was going to die if I didn't take care of this. So the reality of the situation was very, very real and present to me. But it was more than just, you know, when I got on the show, I realized that it wasn't about physically dying. It was about emotionally, that I already had given up. I was just kind of like, hey, I'm going to be a fat person and oh well. And I you know, had all these disappointments about things in my career and my life that didn't go the way I thought. You know, we talked about it earlier about in Detroit. I mean, we had really good teams, and they just kind of dismantled that. And you know, and it wears on you to get booed every time you get introduced to the home game. I mean, and to feel like, hey, I feel that I was a lot better football player than I get credit for. And, you know, I'm not in the Hall of Fame. I didn't win a Super Bowl. And after time, you know, I just kind of started to feel defeated about who I was and the things that had happened in my life. And I really realized this on the show that, you know, all of the things that I've been through in my life, the negative things, the things that I've thought were failures or disappointments, have really been the things that have made me who I am. It's given me more depth and more perspective than I would have had otherwise. And so I have a greater capacity for patience, for kindness, for forgiveness, for love than I really was giving myself credit for. I'm a much more dynamic person than I thought. And when I realized that, hey, you're a pretty good guy, Scott, and you can really tough things out. You can really do these hard things in life. And then I started to open myself up to find, well, where do I get, you know, what is joy in my life? And I just recognize that I've got a lot of amazing things happening on a daily day-to-day basis that bring joy to my life. And so I found me and who I am, and I found that I've got this amazing life that is really worth fighting for and living in. And it's not tied to I'm a football player, you know. In fact, I spent some time with Michael Irvin on the show, and he said it very succinctly. He said, you know, football was just something you did. It's not who you are. And I was able to find that while I was on the show.
Well, Scott, a tremendous story for sure. You keep plugging away. Anything you're promoting right now where we can find information on you, anything you would like to promote right now that's going on, Scott, for you?
Yeah, well, I'm in the process of writing a book. It's going to be called Alive Again, and it talks about this process of you know, kind of finding yourself and finding out that there is more to us and there are ways for us to actually, aside from our willpower, to help us get the tools and the knowledge to be successful and to be our very best selves.
Fantastic. And I think that's education in itself, for sure. Educating people, the public, about how you can have a second chance on life. And that, Scott, you definitely have that second chance on life. And it's interesting that it eats at you as an athlete, saying, man, I could have been a Hall of Famer. And I remember your years when you were really good. And it just goes back to personnel in the right place, right time, right system, for sure. And now you know what to live for. To live for life in general, staying healthy and educating others how to stay healthy. So is the best place to find information on you? Where can we go, Scott? Is there a place? What do you recommend for us to find you?
I guess you can follow me at Scott19Mitchell is my Instagram, or I'm on Facebook, and I have Scott Mitchell on Facebook, and I'll continue to keep filling people full of information and let you know when my book comes out. It's looking like about the 20th of April. So,
well, you have to reach back out to me, and we'll interview for the book for sure on my Author's Corner show, Scott.
Yeah.
Just remember to reach out, say, hey, Neil, and any pointers on getting that promotion going for the books and all that stuff, I'll let you know. Because
fantastic. I'd love to do it.
You're fantastic. So good talking to you, Scott, and best of luck to you. Okay?
Yeah, thanks.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to The Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I've had many, many, many celebrities. But when I get to interview a pit star, forget about it. It doesn't matter what generation. Sam Clancy was unbelievable because of the days I remember watching Pitt basketball, having a season ticket holder, and now for Pitt football. When you talk about a quarterback that's given us a lot of memories in the years he played, I'm so excited to welcome to the program Rod Rutherford, former Pitt star and NFL star. Rod, how are you? And thanks for calling.
Thank you, man. How's everything going?
Fantastic. And it's great to know that you are still in the Pittsburgh area and stuff like that as a coach. And we're going to get quickly to that. But I want to talk about some of the fond memories of the University of Pittsburgh. For our listeners out there that didn't see you play, you were the days of when Cordell Stewart, and basically you were the, in a way, placed in early in your career, again, a Pittsburgh product who went to the University of Pittsburgh, but was behind in the depth chart at quarterback. So they had to figure out some certain things for you right at the beginning when this when Pitt started to build back up their prominence and win, right? Isn't that correct?
Yeah, it was an interesting thing for me. You know, coming out of high school, I wanted to play right away, but it just wasn't in the deck of cards at the time. And then, you know, coach suggested that I use my ability until my time came at the quarterback position. So I was able to play, you know, a couple of different positions my redshirt freshman year. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. And it gave me an understanding of, you know, certain things for a quarterback to expect from a receiver and other things like that. So I benefited from it as well as had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, absolutely, Rod, and that's the thing that made it really exciting, because this is when, again, Pitt was about to transfer out of the stadium to Heinz Field, and winning was just coming, man, right? And you were thrown in the midst at this position, and I remember I think it was against Penn State that you had an unbelievable game, and it was the last time we played Penn State and won at Three Rivers, and I think we can remember that for a long time to come. Aren't we?
Yeah, it was a great opportunity. I mean, it was last game at the last Pitt Penn State game, and then, you know, last season we played at Three Rivers before we moved up to Heinz. And it was one of those days where, you know, I was just basically running around like a kid in the backyard, having fun. I played kick return. Really didn't get too many opportunities to return kicks, but I had one opportunity to catch the football. My very first collegiate catch went for 60 some odd yards, but I probably ran about 100 yards, you know, across the field and up the field and back across the field. And it was just, you know, one of those, probably my best memory at the university.
Yes, definitely. And so, I mean, it was amazing to talk about, and that's what Pitt has on Penn State till we play again. and the history is going to continue in the conversation when I have Coach Cheryl on next segment. And again, the thought process again of, you know, Pitt is on top of Penn State till that rivalry continues. And we see it in the recruiting rivalry for sure with Coach Narduzzi now heading Pitt. But let's go, Rod. I guess the years when you were playing with such unbelievable talent, when you guys were winning big bowl games and you were a top-notch quarterback at Pitt. So when you finally got your shot, you were ready for that shot, weren't you? Especially with this offense that was a high-powered, high-octane offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think Coach Harris did a good job of, you know, explaining to me about the offense. I mean, it took me a while to get it, you know, coming from the Pittsburgh Public City League. You know, it was just 11-11, just playing ball. And then when I got to college, you know, Coach Harris's offense was very structured, very detailed. And it was a little intimidating for me at first. And then as I grew into the offense and learned, you know, little things about the offense, I mean, it was a great, great, great opportunity for me to make plays and, you know, have fun. And I had some great, you know, receivers, obviously Fitzgerald, Chris Wilson, Princell, Brock and Bro. I mean, we had Lamar Slade, you know, my first year as a junior, he was a senior. And it was just an exciting time for the university as well as for football.
And then throwing the ball to Larry Fitzgerald. And what a career he's had in the NFL now, too. And amazing to watch. And I'm sure when you threw that ball up, you knew he was going to get it, right?
Yeah, I mean, Larry's an unbelievable talent. I mean, he's all of 6'3 and a half, you know, 220 some odd pounds. You know, isn't the fastest guy, but, you know, he has You know, his game speed is much faster than the 40 time. And he was just an unbelievable talent. I mean, he was like sometimes a man amongst boys out there.
He definitely was, and you have the octane, that high octane offense, and then you could run the football as well. That's what made it nice, right? Some days you pass, but then hey, just hand the ball off.
And that's a lot of credit to our coaching staff at the time. They were able to, figure out what was best that week versus that defense, and we executed it very well at times, and we had a lot of fun. If it was running the football, we took pride in that, and if it was throwing the ball, we took pride in that. So whatever was, whatever we were called to do that week, I mean, we did it to the top of our ability.
So then finally you had the opportunity to play in the NFL. You were undrafted, but you didn't give up your hope, right? You definitely wanted to say that I'm going to make it to the NFL, right?
Right. Just like every kid growing up, you have dreams of playing in the NFL, and I had an opportunity to be around for 2 years, 1 year in Carolina and 1 year in Pittsburgh. And then I broke my foot, and things kind of slowed down for me. I probably panicked and got out of the business a little too soon when trying to be an NFL player. But the 2 years that I was there, man, I enjoyed every bit of it. It was the greatest experience that I ever had as a ball player. Just from going in the hotels and there's thousands of fans outside just there cheering me on before you even play a game. I mean, it's an experience it's unbelievable.
Definitely. And I think that's the great experience that you're able to give now to kids, for sure, the student athletes. So once you knew life was over for football, because you did end up playing in Europe and you did play some other leagues, and then you finally said, it's time for me to hang it up. When did you kind of have that thought process that coaching was important? When you were playing all those years, did you really study things to say, hey, when I'm finished, I'm going to coach? Did you have aspirations like that earlier as well?
To be honest with you, I didn't really know I wanted to coach until probably, my last couple of years of playing, the year in Pittsburgh and then overseas. But the thing was, I've always wanted to give back. I've always had, a dream of helping, men from the ages of 18 to 24. And then, obviously, you think about it, college football, that fits right there for it. And I figured, I enjoy football. I love football. This would be probably the best way for me to continue to be close to the game as well as give back and help young men to move forward in life.
So tell us a little bit about your experience as a coach. Now, you're currently coaching at IUP, but the process to get to IUP, where did you start out in coaching?
It was an interesting road. When I was in Europe, I kind of realized it was coming to an end, so I reached out to Matt Cavanaugh. He was on Coach Wanstead's staff at the time. So when I came home from Europe, I volunteered for a year. And I learned a lot from Coach Cavs. And then from there, I went to St. Vincent. And then I coached the DBs at St. Vincent. And it was an opportunity for me to just understand the importance of just the coaching part, the relationships. Because at a Division III program, a lot of guys aren't as talented. Obviously, they're not as talented as Division I kids. So you had to really teach. You had to become a teacher. You had to have an intimate relationship with those young men for them to buy in and believe what you were trying to show them. So, I was able to, to get that experience early on in my career. And then from St. Vincent, I went back to Pitt as a GA on defense, and then I moved over to offense. And then Frank Scinetti got me in contact with Kurt, who I had met my freshman year at Pitt. And I gave me the opportunity to coach here at IUP. I've been here for 4 years, going on my fifth year. And I've been coaching the receivers, and I've been enjoying it. I get a chance to explain to receivers the importance of timing and being where you're supposed to be from a quarterback's point of view, and how important it is to be there consistently, to where you can make plays, and it's just reaction. You don't have to it's hard for a quarterback to see all 11 guys. So there's certain things he has to cut down on when he's trying to scan the field. So if you're in the right spot at the same time, he understands what the coverage is and where the ball is supposed to go, and you're there. That's how big plays and successful receivers and quarterback play is created.
Definitely, and I think that it helps that you played a lot of positions. I'm sure you played both sides of the ball in the City League, and then you go on and you're playing every position at Pitt before you became a quarterback. So it's very easy for you to understand a lot of the aspects of the game playing different positions. Some people just played that same position their whole career and they really can't understand things. So you're helping these receivers understand what you think as a quarterback when you're ready to throw the football. And that gives them such an understanding. And then you went out and caught lots of balls for Pitt before you were the quarterback. So, you know, it's interesting how life brings you around that thing. I could see you possibly as an offensive coordinator because you understand a lot of the aspects of that game for sure. Is that a goal for you next, is to be an offensive coordinator?
Definitely. I mean, it's always a goal. You got to set goals. Right now, I just want to continue to improve my situation where I'm at now and learn as much as I can to continue to sharpen my sword as a coach. And, you know, when the time comes and my opportunity comes to move forward in this profession, I'll be ready to take advantage of it. So I'm enjoying it. I'm loving it. I'm enjoying the young men that I'm dealing with. I think we'll have a good team this year, so I'm excited about it. We had a great recruiting class. I'm just looking forward to having another successful football season.
Well, fantastic, Rod. Is there a place we can find information on you? Do you have a Twitter? I know I found you on your personal Facebook, but where listeners can you know, contact you, ask questions or different things, and reach out and thank you for your great career at Pitt for sure. Is there a place for people to find you?
You know, in all honesty, I mean, I create these websites for my kids, but I truly don't know. I mean, I know I'm on Instagram with NVH1224. Obviously, if you go on Facebook, just my name, Rod Rutherford, you'll be able to find me there. And I do have a Twitter, but I really don't know the handle for the Twitter. But Instagram is NVH1224, and then just Rod Rutherford, you'll find me on Facebook.
Well, Rod, it's great, and I'm going to continue to watch your career. Best of luck at IUP, and move forward. And your age, you have lots of opportunity, and you're learning the game, and you continue to teach. And these young men that get the opportunity to play for you and listen to you, you have been everywhere. You played in Europe. You played for the University of Pittsburgh, the top D1 school, and you also had the opportunity to be in the NFL. So you really can provide them those great pointers and suggestions. So thanks again for calling, and hail to Pitt.
Hail to Pitt. Thank you.
All right, take it, Rod. All right, see you later.
All right,
okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.
All right, you're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.